Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Story after story these days, isn't it, about the length of waiting lists for various different procedures? Well, the number of people awaiting eye care procedures in Ireland has reported to increase by a fifth, with some patients waiting for treatments like cataract surgery for more than a year and a half. And there's also an issue with the waiting times for children who need to be looked at by a specialist. On the line to tell us a little bit more, we have Professor James Lockman, who's Director of the Centre for Eye Research Ireland and Professor of Optometry and Vision Science at DIT. James, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so just as I said, we seem to be just reading headline after headline about waiting lists for various different procedures and things like that. So people probably have so many different figures and lengths of times in their heads. Tell me the picture when it comes to eye care procedures. Where are we at?
Well, it's pretty bleak, to be honest. You know, the recent reports about waiting lists for surgical procedures are that the rises are dramatic. So there's about 40,000 people now waiting on the outpatient waiting list to have eye surgery. And that has increased by about 21% over the previous year. So the rate of increase is escalating very, very rapidly also.
What's the reason for that? Why is it escalating so rapidly?
I guess there's two reasons. The two problems really here are, number one, something we can't really do anything about is that we have a growing and aging population. And that's just a natural feature of what's happening. So, I mean, for example, in the last 5 years, in the last census, there was about a 3% growth in the overall Irish population. But if you just look at those aged 65 and over, that population grew by more than 20%. So we now have a bigger population, but the percentage of people who are in the older age group is increasing much, much more rapidly. And when we think about eye disease and eye conditions like cataract or glaucoma or macular degeneration, those kind of conditions tend to affect people who are, I suppose, in that retirement age group. So it's not surprising, really, when we see there's so many more people in that age group that we're having so many more eye care problems and there's so much more to be done. So that, I guess, is a natural problem that we have to, encounter and deal with. So the second reason that it's happening is that our current health system is really just not functioning in a way that can cater to this increased demand, if you like.
What are the biggest problems in your opinion, James?
Two main things. You mentioned children also. I think that's possibly the biggest problem that we face at the moment, in that children currently, when they have their eyes screened in school at age 5 or age 6, when they first enter school, if they fail that screening, they're then referred to an eye exam with a community ophthalmologist. That waiting time can be, in some areas, more than 4 or 5 years. Which is, from a child development perspective, if you imagine a child who's just starting out in school, really trying to kind of get to grips with that and then trying to learn new things and so on, but maybe can't see the board or can't read the material that's in front of them. Their learning is going to be radically interfered with from that. So those delays really are problematic when there is a very simple solution that could be put in place, which would actually almost overnight eliminate that problem.
Which is?
Well, currently, as I said, if you're screened, you have to go and see a community ophthalmologist. And to be honest, there aren't very many community ophthalmologists around the country. But what we do have is a very, very wide and big network of optometrists and opticians. Practically every town around the country would have, you know, one or more optometry practices that people, you know, people routinely go into for their eye exams, for their spectacles. Virtually all of these problems that are detected in school are to do with just needing glasses. So it makes no sense not to make use of this community-wide network that is already in place and can provide the service in a very cost-effective and time-efficient manner. So effectively, overnight, you could wipe out the way it exists.
When such a simple solution exists, I think most people listening, Professor James Lockman, would be kind of banging their heads against the wall, especially parents listening who are in that situation where they have been waiting for their children to be seen for a while. Why? What is the possible reason that this solution wouldn't be looked at?
Really, it's political. You know, there's two types of ophthalmologists in Ireland. One is a community ophthalmologist who effectively provides these pediatric services in the community and is not really involved in hospital-based surgery or anything like that. And then the other group is the surgical consultants that are based in the hospitals. The ophthalmology lobby, if you like, is quite strong. So they would argue that, you know, a certain percentage of children may have health abnormalities that are screened for and detected in school. But the reality is that that's quite small. The reality is the vast majority of these children can be managed simply by, you know, access to a pair of glasses, and that solves their problem. So I think really it The HSE have tried to develop a new primary eye care strategy, and part of that strategy is to develop these primary eye care facilities around the country. So you've probably seen some of the new primary healthcare centres which have been popping up in various regions. The plan, by all account, is to place eye care teams in there, which would be optometrists, ophthalmologists, and orthoptists. You know, that in an ideal scenario would work and would help to some degree, but you know, despite the plan being in place, nothing has actually happened with it. Those people are not in place, and the changes haven't been made.
So it sounds great, but it's actually not happening.
No, it's not happening. And in reality, that solves a certain portion of the problem, where the reality is you could literally just employ the community optometrists that are already out there and have all the equipment in their practices. You know, the HSE are spending money on putting new equipment into these primary eye care facilities when it already exists in optometry practices. So in a sense, it doesn't make sense to go down that route. Certainly not exclusively, anyway. As I said, it could be done a lot more time efficiently and cost effectively just by employing the resources that are already out there in the community.
One of the things we've touched on is just in terms of the wait that people might have for things like cataracts.
Yes.
If you have to wait for a year or a year and a half for surgery on cataracts, what sort of impact could that have?
Well, that's really interesting. There's been not enough, but some research around what the impact of loss of vision is on quality of life. And let's say quality of life is a really, really important thing. You know, we're living much longer. You know, it's expected that about one in every two girls that are born now will live to reach the age of 100. So all of them will have a lot of eye care problems over their lifespan. But quality of life, the quality of that life is really, really important. So some research has been done to assess what impact that has. And it's actually been found to be quite profound. People who have significant vision loss, so that they're maybe vision impaired or possibly even blind, they have basically said that they would be willing to give up more than 50% of the rest of their life just to have good vision back.
Wow.
And that kind of, I think, puts it into context.
I mean,
if you imagine just, you know, losing the ability to go and drive, for example, to be kind of a full and active part of your community. You know, the social isolation and kind of, I suppose, increasing dependence on family members and so on means that people's lives become, I suppose, a lot more difficult. And that has other health consequences. People have falls, for example, which leads to hip fractures. Depression, for example, becomes a problem. And there may be even, you know, you could even make the link that it may be related to kind of premature mortality. So effectively, the impact of having to wait for extensive periods, a year, 2 years or so on, for some procedures like cataract is relatively straightforward in that you can go in and have the surgery and the very next day your vision should be quite clear and you have that done. For other conditions, maybe like glaucoma, for example, or macular degeneration, where you don't have the access to the fast treatment that's needed, that might lead to irreversible blindness. So it can be more significant and more serious for them that they don't get the treatment in the timely manner that's required, and therefore the loss of vision, if you like, is profound and can't be recovered.
It's no surprise then that we read about reports last week that some people are deciding to go from the Republic of Ireland and go cross border for procedures. How does that work?
We have one of the means the government have put in place here is the National Treatment Purchase Fund, which is a way to try and kind of, I suppose, deal with people who've been on waiting lists for a long time and maybe where the care can be accessed in the UK or elsewhere a lot more promptly. And I guess, I mean, that it actually really shows the UK is an example of a country where they have latched onto this idea of what's called shared care. So shared care just means that optometrists who work in the community and ophthalmologists who work in the hospital share the care. So, for example, if someone has surgery, it takes place in the hospital. But all the, say, preoperative evaluations happen in the community. And then after the surgery, all the postoperative care happens in the community. So effectively, people are kept away from the hospital. So the surgeons get to do surgery much more rather than having to, I suppose, sit with patients after the surgery and just do the routine tests that are required just to make sure that they're recovering okay and so on when they can be provided in the community. So the more people we can keep out of the hospital, the better. So I think the UK showed that that works very well. And that's why people here in Cork and so on can travel up to Belfast and access cataract surgery in a much more timely manner.
The Minister for Health recently, Professor James Ockman, has said he wants to remove private practice from public hospitals. What do you think about that?
In some ways, I don't think it's a bad idea. You know, there is obviously competition between the public and private aspects in public hospitals. So, you know, this idea that private patients can, I suppose, fast track the care system and access care in a public hospital in a more timely manner than people who are on the public waiting lists isn't really all that equitable in some sense. So I wouldn't disagree with the idea of keeping private healthcare out of the public hospitals. The reality is, though, that the whole health system needs to be reformed. As I said, we have this aging population, we have a growing population. So worldwide, we're facing this problem whereby we need to provide more care and better care. That, in reality, requires a mix of public and private healthcare. But I think the real solution is actually to employ the resources that we do have already in the community. And by making adequate use of those, we can actually just radically cut the waiting list in the hospital system. And I'll just give you an example. I ran a glaucoma shared care scheme in the National Optometry Center with a colleague of mine, Katrina Barrett, and Professor Colm O'Brien in the Mater Hospital, where we established effectively that kind of system whereby we, instead of optometrists referring to the hospital, they're referred to our clinic in the National Optometry Center. We were able to take about 75% of people who would have traditionally gone into the hospital out of the hospital. We were able to look after them in the National Optometry Center itself. So if you imagine the impact of that on waiting lists, if that was rolled out nationally. There was another example of the Sligo post-cataract scheme, which again has taken all of the post-cataract care out of the hospital and back into the community. So these things can happen, and they can happen very quickly and very cost-effectively if the political will is there to make them actually happen.
It's extremely frustrating when you hear it just put so plainly. Thank you so much, Professor James Lockman, for joining us on the programme today. And people probably especially frustrated hearing some of the points that Professor Lockman made, given some of the discussions that we've been having in lots of different areas of our healthcare system at the moment. But again, not entirely disconnected as we talk about the cervical screening controversy. We're hearing politics again, politics being played with people's lives, with people's health. And it's simply just not.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.